Okay, recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have on the line Mr. William F. Cofield. He's a lawyer in Washington, D.C., and he's representing Mr. Rashid Al-Malik. And the law firm that Mr. Cofield works for is Berliner, Corcoran, and Rowe, and they can be found on the net at bcr.us. Bill, it's you know, it's great to talk to you. That's a cliche, but it really is.
Thanks, Thomas.
Now, I don't really know, you know, this is a very quick job here. You know, I wasn't really aware to, you know, I looked at the media reports, and the first thing I saw was that Thomas Barak, this very wealthy man in Southern California, is charged with basically, as I understand it, charged with violating the foreign agent lobbying act or whatever it is, meaning that, you know, he's doing foreign lobbying and not telling anybody about it, right? Something like that. And then
correct.
I,
it's the Foreign Agents Registration Act, or FARA.
Okay, and, great. FARA, yeah.
And what he's being charged with, along with Mr. Al-Malik, is being an unregistered foreign agent of a foreign sovereign.
Right. Now, then I quickly understood, this is something I've been dealing with for 30-40 years. You know, when you're dealing with foreign states, you probably, and you're getting paid for doing that, you have to register. But now, if you're not getting paid, what does that mean? Because
it doesn't rise or fall on whether you're being paid necessarily. There's other things that are considered. Obviously, a significant indicator as to whether you're acting as a foreign agent is if you're being paid for that service, if you're being paid to interact with government officials from the United States on behalf of a foreign sovereign. And that's just not the case here. Neither Mr. Barak nor Mr. Al-Malik were being paid for what they were doing.
That's what I was told by your colleague, Matt Harrington. Yeah. So now if you're not being paid, but, you know, you're doing things sort of, I would figure that probably you want to register, obviously. But, you know, how do you look at this? I mean, how much innocence or guilt is there in this situation where you basically have some folks who are close to the president, that is Donald Trump, and, you know, the candidate, and they want the United Arab Emirates to kind of be in a good position, right? They want to do some diplomacy, but they're not really owning up to that with the public, that is. You know, see where I'm going with this? I mean, the public has a right to know, but on the other hand, you can't really do diplomacy without some discretion and some maybe even secrecy.
Well, and what I would say is if it was that simple, I think it'd be an easier question, but it's not. I mean, the reality is that neither Mr. Barak nor Mr. Al-Malik were acting on behalf of any one country.
Okay,
They both have Arab heritage.
Yeah.
They both lived and worked in the United States.
Right.
They both feel very strongly about about the citizens of the United States and the citizens of our Arab allies getting along.
Okay.
And it's more that kind of outreach and building bridges of understanding and that type of thing that they were engaged in. They were not engaged in lobbying on behalf of any specific country.
Now, why did the government then, Department of Justice, go forward with this? If it's really not, what you say, it's not, right? I mean, maybe they're working for Israel. I mean, you mind me asking? You know, the benefit.
No, I mean, it's. I wish I could answer that question. I really don't know. You'd have to ask somebody from the Department of Justice,
right?
Because it came as a complete surprise to us, especially given that Mr. Al-Malik was asked to voluntarily cooperate with the special counsel at the time that the special counsel's office was investigating a variety of issues, primarily Russian interference in the 2016 election. Mr. Al-Malik voluntarily participated in an interview, cooperated with the special counsel's office. They took no action against him. So
You're talking about Robert Mueller, of course. We're really scratching our heads on this one. Yeah, you're talking about Robert Mueller, of course, obviously.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're scratching your head. So what is going on? It's kind of interesting.
I wish I knew. I just think it's an overzealous prosecution. I mean, I think if you read some of the things that they're reading and take them out of context, mm-hmm. or don't give the full story of what's going on, you might, you know, be led to believe one thing as opposed to another. But the reality here is they weren't working for any one individual country.
Right.
They were working on behalf of all the citizens of the United States and all citizens mm-hmm. of our Arab allies, because that's what they're passionate about. These
yep.
gentlemen mm-hmm. were passionate about their heritage. They're passionate
yep.
about the country they were working in, and they knew people, loved people in both countries,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to see the countries have a better relationship. And,
yeah.
you know, when at the very beginning of the Trump campaign, when there were issues about a Muslim ban, it disturbed them,
yeah.
And
yeah.
it was something that they, you know, wanted to, you know, they wanted to make sure that there weren't underlying prejudices and that
sure.
the citizens of the countries that they love would all be getting along and understanding each other.
Yeah. Well, sometimes when you try to bring peace, people are going to get very angry.
I think that's sometimes very true.
Yeah. Because
unfortunately.
I was talking to, it's a pretty interesting story, not terribly relevant, but it's kind of interesting. Mr. Ari Ben-Menash, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he was he's about maybe 70 right now, and he, in the 70s and 80s, he apparently was working for Israeli military intelligence, and he told me, I've interviewed him, and he's told me that the U.S. government charged him with, I guess, some sort of violation of arms smuggling or something like that, you know. And they had chains on him, and you know they were really going after him. And of course, he wasn't clearly working for Israeli intelligence; it was secret, you know. Anyway, he said that the reason the U.S. government went after him, he did tell me this is amazing, is because he was able to go over to meet Yasser Arafat in Tunis, and he did that. And of course, I don't know if he did it on his own or whatever. And the next thing he knows, you know, he's like very unpopular.
He's persona non grata.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is kind of interesting. You know, if Mr. Barak and Mr. Al-Rashid, I'm sorry, is that how you pronounce it?
Al-Malik.
Yeah, excuse me. If they want to kind of favor, you know, diplomacy, you know, and get the United States and maybe even Israel or whatever, getting them to talk and, you know, improving the situation, well, that's probably a good idea. The question is, how do you do it, right? And should candidates for office, you know, should the, well, anyway, you know, it's pretty obvious questions, right? I mean, how do you do this kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not sure there's an answer. That's the unfortunate thing. I mean, what about religious groups that are seeking out and aren't necessarily favoring any particular country, but
mm-hmm.
it's Christians wanting to outreach to Hebrews, or it's Hebrews and Christians wanting to reach out to Muslims. You know, at what point are you doing something on behalf of another country if you're simply from the United States
mm-hmm.
and you're advocating on behalf of citizens of another country simply because of their religion and trying to build a better relationship between their citizens and our citizens?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. And you know, maybe I've argued this to Ben-Menash. I said, you know, I think it's a good idea that Israel establish relations with all the Arab states. You know, and my former, I wouldn't say friends, but Hamas, founders of Hamas, when I talked to them, they were killed after I talked to them. But, you know, they would probably be upset at first. But actually, it's a good idea to have diplomatic. We should have diplomatic relations with North Korea, for example, whatever. And so I would argue that, you know, it's just a question of detail. How do you work this out so the American public can understand? But the problem is, if you do that, you're not necessarily very effective in the public eye. You may have a problem.
I think the other thing that's significant here is
you agree
is
with
if
that?
You look. I do, and I think if you look at if you look at you know, the press that's out here, and if you look at the indictment that's been unsealed, mm-hmm. the positions that were being taken here are nothing that are covert or anything that isn't already being supported by the United States government. So it seems mm-hmm. almost absurd. What is I mean if there was some radical view that was trying to be pushed or something along those lines, you might look at this and go, okay, and want to dig deeper. But these positions that they're even talking about and the subjects that they're talking about are things that are well known in the United States and well known in the with our Arab allies, and is something that is publicly discussed all the time. So it's
nothing secret.
Again, it's very confusing, and it creates it just creates as I said, confusion and bewilderment, certainly on behalf of Mr. Al-Malik.
Well, he's not in the United States, right? He's after his FBI interview, apparently I read that he left. Is that the case?
The timing had nothing to do with his FBI interview.
Oh, okay.
He had planned to go back. In fact, we moved up his interview with the special counsel simply because he was planned to travel back out of the country. It had to do with one of his children's education. So, okay. The implication that he fled the country is just
okay.
It is just completely misleading and false.
Now, what is his role exactly in the UAE? Officialdom there, you know, does he have any
He has no official role with the UAE government at all.
Okay.
He's a private businessman.
I see. That's what I figured. Okay. Now, it's alleged that he might be working for the intelligence service.
He is not an employee of the intelligence service.
So the outcome of this effort by Mr. Barak and Mr. Al-Malik is that Israel has diplomatic relations with the UAE, is that correct, basically?
I don't know that that was their...
I don't know
that being their goal, but it is my understanding that, that the UAE and Israel have moved toward normalizing relations.
Right. And so commercial relations are possible, and now they're talking, and, you know, which is all great, you know. So.
Oh, I think... And to that end, I mean, I think that I can't speak for Mr. Barak, but I can certainly tell you that I believe that Mr. Al-Malik firmly believes that creating relationships that also create economic benefit for both citizens only helps to foster goodwill and foster a good relationship. So to the extent that a relationship can create economic opportunity, they were always focused on that.
You know, I'm going to mention a name right now. I don't know if you ever heard of this fellow, but he was a friend of mine for about 30, 40 years. I met him in Paris, Samuel Pizar, P-I-S-A-R. And his name comes to mind. He's passed away, but a couple of years ago, I think. But we were quite good friends, and of course, he's Jewish. He was Jewish, that is. Born in Bialystok, Poland, kind of in the nasty area there, in World War II. But he developed a theory, a thesis, I guess, in the 60s, that the United States and the Soviet Union ought to basically do business together, détente. Based on business, the idea of business. And he did sort of argue, he knew Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon, but he said, hey, these guys took my idea, didn't really give him credit. And I accepted that. I mean, it's probably, he wrote a book called Les Armes de la Paix, the Weapons of Commerce in English. And you ought to maybe look into that, because that's basically the foundation of this argument, right, that we need to, okay, the Palestinians are being screwed over, no question. Should they be sidelined? No, but building relations, building business relations, commercial relations is the way to go. And it's going to anger some people because, you know, the war game starts to go down in importance. But you follow what I'm saying? I mean, Pizar would be the guy to go to. Of course, he's dead, but I can help you with that. And Pizar and I were, like I said, very close, and I totally agree with him. And you know, I tried to reach out to Saddam Hussein. I'm a journalist, of course. I wanted to interview Saddam Hussein. I wanted to interview Muammar Gaddafi, and the U.S. government didn't like that, you know, but I still went ahead. And I interviewed founders of Hamas. You know, anyway, so I think you need to do this. Question is, how do you do it? You know, and Ari Ben-Menash had a pretty bad experience, and so... And Mr. Barak and Mr. Al-Malik are having bad experience too. But anyway, that's my 2 cents worth right now, Bill.
Right.
Yeah. But what do you think? What's your comment about weapons of peace?
I don't think it takes long to think about the premise that you know, creating economic opportunity for people fosters goodwill. It just makes common sense.
Yes,
you don't
it
have
does.
To think long and hard.
No, I'm not suggesting you do. Yeah, no, it's pretty obvious. But now there is not much agreement though around the world, you know, to do that. For example, we have very bad relations with North Korea, you know, for example. And it's kind of ridiculous, right? But how do we improve that? Well, just by doing what you just said.
Well, it's a little bit easier when you're doing it with an ally, and that's what and that's clearly what Mr. Barak and Mr. Al-Malik were trying to do.
Of course. But, you know, Soviet Union was not an ally. I'm just suggesting that, you know, so, well, okay. Now, the government is determined to kind of set a precedent. Is that what's going on? I mean, you know,
I can't speak to what I think the government's doing. I'm kind of scratching my head on this one.
Okay.
And so I really can't comment on it.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, I think that their actions are extremely unfortunate, and I think they're misguided.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to think of some good questions here.
Well, Thomas, I've got to kind of run.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, no, I've gotten into this pretty well. Thanks so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, I appreciate it, Thomas, and good luck with this.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You take care. Thank you.